Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Mary Michael Shelley. Shelley is a self-taught folk artist. Her beautiful wood-carved and painted pictures can be seen in many permanent collections and museums around the country, including the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., the National Museum of Women in the Arts, and the American Museum in England. A piece she created for the 1996 Olympics can also be seen in the Coca-Cola Museum in Atlanta. In addition to her art, Shelley has also worked as a psychotherapist since the early 1990s. And welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Tish.
Now you grew up on a 120-acre farm in Pennsylvania. Tell us about your early years. I know early on you wanted to be a writer. So talk to us about that.
Well, relative to the farm, my grandparents had a dairy in the 1940s, complete with, they did milk delivery, a small dairy that closed in the Second World War when all the drivers were drafted. Early on, my parents came to Pennsylvania, and my father was sort of a gentleman farmer type.
Oh.
He was from East Orange, New Jersey, and it was my mother's parents who kind of lured them down there to do farming. So my father never really took to farming, became a commercial artist. He originally came to Cornell, and eventually I found my way to Cornell. I wanted to be a writer. I'd always wanted to be a writer since I was, say, maybe even 10 or 12. I remember writing a short story then.
So you were thinking in terms of creative writing.
Oh, yes. I wanted to be a creative writer. Was a little confused then about whether to be a psychology major or a writer. Majored in writing. And when I graduated from Cornell, I was a little adrift, and I was working for Historic Ithaca renovating the Clinton House.
Mm.
And I was desperate to learn carpentry skills and get out of sweeping and painting and sanding. So my father sent me a carving that he made of me at the farm where I grew up. It kind of featured me riding my horse with my dog behind in the farm. And when he did that, I said, whoa, I could do this. This would be a way to get my hands on wood.
Wow.
So that's when I started carving. Pretty much that day, I was in Clinton House, and there were carving boards galore everywhere, wide shelf boards made out of white pine that had been painted. So it was very easy to start. The materials were all around, and that's how I got started.
So you just picked up a piece of wood and started carving. What was it that captured your imagination about this art and craft?
Well, actually, when I was a child, we had a picture by somebody named Mario Sanchez, who worked out of Key West, Florida, and he's a pretty famous fellow now. He died about 5 or 6 years ago, but he also did painted wood carvings, and I always saw that picture. I would lie on the couch upside down looking at it. And when my father sent me that picture, which of me at the farm, he was inspired by Mario Sanchez's work. And so I began to do it too.
Oh, that's amazing to me. So how did you actually learn the craft, though? I mean, obviously you had to learn how to express yourself in this medium.
Uh-huh.
Tell us how you did that. It had to be hit and miss. And
well, if you saw what I did in 1974, you'd say, yeah, she did teach herself. much simpler, much smaller, not very deep. And so basically I was just working with X-Acto knives. My father told me, get an X-Acto knife set, and then you don't have to worry about sharpening your tools. So the first ones were maybe 8 inches by 9 inches. And then I started around 1974, so I've been going for a long time carving. So I truly have learned by the school of hard knocks.
Uh-huh.
You know, how to get better.
Did you ever think about carving sculptures rather than pictures?
Did
that take your imagination?
It's so heavy. You got to carry it around, you got to store it. And then for other people, it's also a problem if you even wanted to give it away. Like when I first started carving, I really liked the fact that you could get instant comment on a piece of artwork. You didn't have to have somebody read it for 2 months and then give it back to you and you're not sure they really read it.
Uh-huh.
Whereas artwork you can just look at and it's instantly, you know, whether you like it or not. And you can tell whether somebody likes it or not, so you get that instant feedback.
Yeah.
But I also gave away a lot of my work in the beginning, and I don't know, sculpture never occurred to me. Possibly because the Mario Sanchez piece, that was sort of my model of how to start.
Uh-huh.
That was what I was trying to accomplish. So
now tell me how you do this creatively. Do you carve the whole idea out and then start painting it? Or do you start painting it as you go along?
Uh-huh.
Tell us how you do the process.
Well, the drawing is worked out in advance entirely. All the details that are in the carving are in the drawing, because I don't want to start carving it and cut off something where I wish I had put something.
Mm-hmm.
So the design part is really important. But then when I start to carve, the whole thing is carved, basically, before I start to paint. Occasionally I'll start to paint it and realize it's too busy. I paint and paint it and it doesn't look right. You know, this leaf is in front of something that I wish I hadn't covered it up.
Mm.
And then I'll carve it off and then paint it. But generally the process is do the drawing, do maybe even 8 versions of the drawing, keep tracing it until it looks right, then trace it on to a piece of wood. After I have the drawing, which is much smaller than the wood, I go to a copy place and Xerox the drawing to the right size, then trace it on the wood, paint it, do the photographs, take it to farmer's market,
sell and it. The rest is history, or somebody's right. collection, right?
Yeah.
So when you're doing the drawing, do you have the colors in mind, or does that just happen as you're painting
it? Yeah, people ask that question a lot, but I don't think about the colors at all until I literally sit down and am ready to paint. And I think, okay, this is sort of going to be a green theme, or as I've gotten better at painting, I do tend to think in terms of what colors go well together. So a green and red theme, or a blue and yellow theme, those tend to be the main themes I work in. I kind of also use browns, tans, sort of mm-hmm. that kind of.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I don't think about it at all until I start.
Oh, that's interesting to me. Now you've said that your artwork documents events and feelings in your life.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever reached a point where you can't convey what you want to convey emotionally with this particular medium?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, actually, oftentimes I start with a picture, and as I do it, I realize it actually carries my emotions, so it works really well as a metaphor. I'm not always working like I have this feeling that I want to convey, but more it evolves, such as, like, I do a lot of diner pictures, and those have evolved from simple pictures of diners to featuring the waitress. That was around the time of the Equal Rights Amendment. I was very much wanting the Equal Rights Amendment to be passed.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely wanted to have the word she in the Constitution, but just didn't happen.
That's right.
So those have started to work metaphorically for me as sort of metaphors for waiting and hunger and nurturance. I kind of vowed that I would keep doing the waitress theme until the Equal Rights Amendment was passed, but I don't know. I don't know whether I should keep waiting.
You will be doing that perhaps for the rest of your life, Mary.
Well, I'd be happy if it happened in my lifetime. Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, you're also trying to capture the cultural now, right? I mean, what's happening in the culture around you?
That was happening in the culture around me. It was something I was upset about. And then it eventually evolved into, I have a couple children, so it evolved into the endless feeding of meals, in the idea of endlessly nurturing people, which kind of now is carried a little bit with being a therapist and giving, and the thought of giving, receiving, that kind of concept. It's hard to put into words, but
yeah.
So the metaphor keeps traveling along.
Uh-huh. Wherever your life takes you, it sounds
right,
like.
Right, right. So the best metaphors are ones that work for many different situations.
Well, I want to continue on that theme of you working as a therapist. It started in the early 1990s when you started becoming a therapist. How has that affected your work? I mean, you obviously can't do paintings of patients. I mean,
well, actually, I don't. I keep the two things very separate, but it's affected my work in that as an artist, basically being a therapist is my day job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I'm a good therapist, but
mm-hmm.
it is my day job. And a lot of artists kind of have the ambition of making their living from their work, which I probably could, but I wouldn't have health insurance, or there might be things that I might not be able to have. So being a therapist or having a day job helps me to not start chasing a sale, to not worry about
mm-hmm.
making a sale, to have the freedom to follow what interests me and hopefully mm-hmm. do something that also speaks to other people. But I do think it has sort of crept into some of the dream pieces, the yes pieces. I do a yes series, which is basically about get up on a gray November day like today and say yes, jump into it kind of thing.
So celebrate life no matter what.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think that's the closest where they overlap.
Mm-hmm. I find your work absolutely gorgeous and beautiful,
uh-huh.
but to me it brings up these feelings of nostalgia, almost like
uh-huh.
it's an old-fashioned piece that I'm looking at.
Uh-huh.
Do you go for that notion of these being almost like antiques? Do these pieces, they're so, you know, I mean, I don't know how to put it into words either, but they seem to be universal and they're not really ancient, but they do look old, and they still look modern.
Well, that's nice to hear. I don't think I'm trying to do that. They just have evolved to look a certain way. Maybe you're thinking because I have shading on them, or I'm not sure, but...
It's old-fashioned themes, too.
I'm doing them, I don't think I want to make this look a certain way. They've just sort of evolved, and now they just keep looking that way. I can't...
Uh-huh. Well, it's obviously your style and your art, and it's you.
I mean, I haven't done any other kind of art, and when I do drawings, they have kind of a similar look. It's just... I'm not naturally an artist. Even though my father was a commercial artist, I felt like I could never do artwork. They just evolved.
Are you? I like to ask artists this because are you affected by reviews and people's opinions about your work? Does that affect you at all and change you?
Well, I'm not like an actor who comes out with a play and they get their acting character kind of dished. I will take all the reviews there are out there. There are not many of them for artists right now, so. But I try not to be affected too much by other things. I think if I had somebody say I hate her work in the New York Times, that would definitely affect me negatively.
I would think so.
I mean, it might depress me. I might have trouble going out to the studio, but I keep going out there.
Uh-huh. So, how does somebody who does the work that you do get the work to get into museums and
Well, I was very lucky early in my career
collections.
To have various friends in New York who I went to Cornell with who were art majors who were trying to make their way in New York City. And so I would go down and visit them, and they would say, go look up so-and-so, go look up so-and-so. And I made a couple trips and found somebody on the second trip at the very end who ended up being quite a mentor. He ended up representing me from probably 1976 to 1990 when he died, unfortunately. And that was kind of a really major loss because he was both... kind of a professional contact, but a friend. And so pretty much since then, I've been on my own.
So you do have to take your stuff and put it out there and have people judge it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, for an artist, the best judgment is whether you sell things. I mean, it's sort of sad, but, you know, it's relative to how things have gotten into museums, that gallery promoted me. Not many galleries now can do that, but he believed in my work and had contacts and said, I think this person's work is important. And they said, yeah, we'd like it. And so as an artist, you're always just happy when a museum keeps your work, that they don't sell it off, because that means that it's a part of their collecting goals.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, that's interesting. If you're just joining us, my guest is Mary Michael Shelley. She's a folk artist. And we're talking about her beautiful wood carvings that she paints and tells stories about her life with. It's really quite beautiful stuff. Now you talk about how you experience a sense of isolation because you work alone for so many hours. Talk to us about that. Is that a negative aspect of being an artist, or does it help bring out your creativity? Tell us.
Well, I think I like being alone. I like the solitude. There are periods of time when one's career seems to be at a slow pace, when being alone is sometimes hard. But basically, I think that you have to be able to be alone to be an artist, although certainly there are people who do artwork who aren't alone. They share studios, or they work as actors or musicians. So, but that has been a struggle at times, and finding how to get out of one of those periods of, oh, no, I have to go out to my studio. And I'm not feeling excited about it. So that's when it's hardest to feel alone.
Yeah. Are you somebody who feels like you have to keep working, though?
Oh, yeah.
Keep it going? Like many writers say, I have to write every day, even if I don't produce something that I love.
Yeah, that's who I am. That's how I work out all kinds of life issues. It's, you know, I remember periods of time by artwork I created in that period of time. And I just like seeing things come to shape out of wood. I like seeing them get painted and putting them on my wall, or having them go to someone else's house. It's just who I am, being an artist. So,
do you show everything that you create, or do you have some private pieces about certain times in your life that you don't share with the public?
Well, I do tend to work in series, and I like to keep the first one or two in a series. So those I keep in my house. I don't take them out. I don't show them, so I'm not tempted to sell them. Occasionally I do, because I might have a show and have to do the farmer's market or keep a lot of things, you know, I'm short of pieces, basically.
Yeah.
But generally, they don't make it out of my house. Most of my work people see. It's not really anything that I hide in my work or mm-hmm. feel like I wouldn't show people. There are a few terrible pieces that I have in my attic that
oh,
I
really?
Haven't taken out.
We'll have to decide after you die whether those are really terrible pieces when they have
I think they really are sort of terrible.
Why do you keep them? Just as a reminder?
Well, when you put 40 hours into it, it's hard to get rid of it. Plus, if you have the storage space, it's always dangerous. So, I don't know. I haven't looked at them for a while. I'm going to go home and look at them, see whether they're that terrible after all.
Well, I would think it might inspire you because you've progressed so much since those times when you made stuff that you didn't really like. Now you have many pictures of diners, as we said, and people sailing, but you also return to the farm a lot and pick images of the barn and little kids with farm equipment. Tell us.
Yeah, I did grow up on a farm. I spent a lot of time in our barn. I love barns. I love how big they are and how they sound in the winter and the pigeons, and there's just the sense of space. They're kind of large, abandoned spaces. I think I've described them as sort of cathedrals. They're sort of like a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
Spent a lot of time in them. I had a horse. I did a lot of shoveling of manure out of my horse's stall. And then also, having worked for Historic Ithaca, I was very involved in barns in terms of them falling down around us, and just wanted to just kind of do a picture of a barn before it fell down. Literally.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of go around and take pictures of barns. I just like barns. I like their shapes.
Yeah. It's kind of a comforting
kind
image
of
to me to see your barns and to see barns around here. I hadn't seen that many barns.
Right.
I came here from California, and we don't have that many barns
in
Southern California. So it's absolutely beautiful. Now, you also did a dream series, as you mentioned. Are these literally taken from dreams or just your imagination? Tell us about that dream series.
Well, I've called them my dream series because they aren't literally a place or a thing. They're just literally kind of come out of a feeling. So the dream pieces kind of came out of the yes pieces. The yes pieces all had yes on them.
The word yes?
Yes. Yes, they did. And the dream pieces were sort of more, I didn't know where they were going, but they were about a feeling that maybe I couldn't even name. So I call them dream pieces. Also out of the dream pieces came my dog series, which is sort of about, I think of them as sort of protective icons. I've done maybe about 20, I'd call them my guard dog series.
Mm.
And originally they sort of started as a dream piece, and then they evolved in a whole series of them, their own. So, my brother had died, my father was dying, and so it was kind of like about feeling safe and protected.
I think that's interesting that you use metaphor instead of blatantly like carving out a picture of your father over a field or something literal that a lot of artists do.
Well, I'm aware that I may keep two or three of those dog pieces, but ultimately I let things go to other people, so they have to speak to other people as well as to me. So oftentimes they have to be
more universal,
kind of malleable for other people to be able to put their own meaning on it, because I wouldn't want that to have the same meaning for somebody who had that piece of work. They may see something entirely different in it. So that's why sometimes I'm actually cautious about talking about the meaning of it to me, because
I find a lot of artists do that. They don't want to put their their notes on this. They want people to be able to be free to see what they see, instead of judging themselves, going, maybe I'm wrong,
Like a picture's worth a thousand words,
exactly.
Someone may have other words about it. So.
Now, do you do commissions? And how does that work? Somebody says, I want an image of so-and-so. How do they do that?
Well, some people want very specific images, with the most common being themselves at a certain place. Common for people on anniversaries to do that, to want to commemorate something that relates to earlier years or their children. Other people kind of give me more free rein. I mean, the best commissions are where I'm left some freedom in that sense. So,
Is that a different feeling for you when you're doing a commission? Do you put the same kind of emotion and intensity and creativity into it?
Well, I try to keep the commissions to no more than about a quarter of what I do.
Mm.
Sometimes out of a commission comes an idea for doing something new. So mm-hmm. they're useful to me in that. But I am careful not to do too many commissions and to keep doing my own work in the interim.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever make political statements? I know you mentioned the waitress in the in the ERA, but
right.
do you think
generally not
artwork should be political or?
No, generally not, because I mean I think my diner pieces stand on their own without that, and I wouldn't want somebody to see it as a political work. So generally I don't. In fact, you're lucky I'm talking to you about this because I don't talk about it much. Keep it quiet, okay?
I will try to whisper my next question. Now, I want to ask you this, too. As you've gotten older and been in this art for many, many years, have you felt your work changing or your feelings about it changing at all? Has it evolved in different surprising ways, perhaps?
I can see myself starting to do smaller pieces. At a certain period in my life, I started doing very large pieces. For instance, I have something at the airport that threw my back out, and I said, I'll never do anything that big again.
Huh.
So I find myself doing smaller pieces, more simplistic pieces. By the time I get to be 80, I might be doing really smaller pieces entirely. I hope to be carving.
But they can't
for a
be too
time.
Small because then,
no,
you know,
no.
when you're 80,
no.
your eyes start going right
no,
instead
no, no,
of your
no.
back.
Yeah, not that bad. No, when I talk about small, I'm talking about 10 by 12.
Oh,
because
I see.
I've actually done, for a while there, I was doing a number of pieces that were 2.5 feet by 3.5 feet. So those start to get heavy to carry around. But
are you trying to convey anything in your art about the process of aging as a woman?
Actually, that is a theme I'm trying to figure out how to do. I have been thinking about that, and I haven't figured out. I feel like I'm in between periods where I'm trying to work on developing something new that talks about aging and how I feel about dying, you know, which is what people do as they get older, is they realize, you know, that eventually that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so that, and also about the world, you know, worried about the world, resources,
mm-hmm.
water,
environment. A lot of
that,
your stuff does have the environment.
Well,
in it.
Yeah, but what kind of metaphor would carry that without being, that would work for me and for other people?
You might have to go back into the words.
Maybe. I don't know.
Now, you say that you like to go to the farmer's market and do demonstrations for people because you
yes.
want them to see a real living, working artist.
Uh-huh.
To tell us what that relationship is like when you're actually with people watching you like
uh-huh.
that.
Well, I started doing it because it helps people to understand how my work is done because it's painted. Otherwise, they might think it's molded, or
mm-hmm.
lots of times they'll ask me, is that glued on? Do you carve it and then glue it on? So it's largely to help people understand how it's made, which I think has been a large way that I've let people know about my work. Not being in a, not generally using the gallery system right now, it's been a useful thing for me. And
I was just wondering if it makes you self-conscious or changes the way you do things, and is your technique more deliberate or less creative?
Well, actually, I think of carving as fairly mechanical. If you've seen people knitting and watching TV,
mm-hmm,
you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
basically, I've got to watch a little more what's happening because I don't want to cut myself. But carving is pretty routine to me at this point. I've done a lot of it. I don't get nervous. I do save the finest details for my studio so I don't get distracted right in the middle of, you know, carving someone's nose. Something that I can't carve deeper and fix. But I don't get put off. Kind of an interesting thing happened. I have a lot of kids that watch me, and one of them came back who used to watch me at 8 or 10 and bought a piece at 35. They said they've been waiting all those years to get a piece.
Wow.
That was very touching. So they had kids of their own that were about the same age as when they were watching me. So
that shows you you've had a long career.
Yeah.
You know, I was wondering this, too. This almost seems like a lost art. You don't hear about that many people doing this kind of carving of pictures. Do you feel like you need to be an ambassador to keep the art alive and to keep it moving into the future and having young people interested?
Well, I do think there'll probably be a few carvers that evolve out of watching me. I think that's a really nice thing. If I could accomplish it, that would be nice. But I also think maybe people watch me and they think of being artists, and they'll always say to me, "Oh, you have such talent." And I'll say, "Well, actually, I've been doing this 40 years." So a lot of it has evolved, and I try to encourage people to just find that part in themselves, not necessarily being a carver, but perhaps another kind of artist.
Well, what kinds of art inspires you? Are you somebody who goes to art galleries and likes particular artists and is inspired by them as well?
I do happen into art galleries, but I don't really see a lot of art other than what I see in Ithaca. I don't go to the New York City anymore. I used to go there more when my father was alive. When I was a kid, one of the things we would do was go to a lot of museums with my father. My parents were divorced. He lived in New York City, and I would go to a lot of museums. So I saw an awful lot of artwork, and he was a great appreciator of work.
So you must have been inspired by some of it, huh?
I think somewhere deep in my brain it has a big effect, but I couldn't, say exactly what part of that experience affected me, other than that it was kind of exciting to be a visual artist when I started to become one, leave the writing behind.
You have no regrets about that, huh? Not pursuing the writing?
No, it's actually, I think writing is a very hard way to make a living, and I always saw that I had more potential to do that as a visual artist, and for me it was always important to be a professional in that way, to be able to sell my work, because by selling one's work, one buys time to do one's work, and that's important.
Yeah, it is. Now, are there any upcoming exhibits, any place where people in this vicinity, in our region, might be able to see some of your stuff in the future?
Yeah, I don't have anything set up right now. I've talked with a few people, but I actually had a few shows this year, and I'm kind of recovering from schlepping my stuff here and there. So,
well, how about some contact information so people can look at your stuff on the web? Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do have a website. It's maryshelleyfolkart.com. Shelley spelled with an E-Y, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y. So,
can you repeat that again?
maryshelleyfolkart.com. And there, at my website, you can see my blog, which I show pieces being made from start to finish, and that's kind of fun. Right on the first page, just go to the blog connection.
Yeah, and there's some beautiful, beautiful pictures of your work.
Well, thank you.
Mary Michael Shelley, thank you so much for joining us, and keep up the wonderful art. I think it's absolutely beautiful.
Okay, it's an honor. Thanks for having me on your show, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.